After I speak, we'll need to appoint me temporarily as the pro tem, chair pro tem, in the absence of Daniel Odell. But my name is Grant Rosenberg. Welcome to the City of Knoxville Board of Zoning Appeals. I'll be conducting the meeting today here online. With me are other members of the BZA, Don Horton, David Dupree, and Christina Buhler. Also here online are city staff members. Today's meeting will be conducted in the order of the agenda. Agendas were emailed to all meeting attendees prior to today's online meeting. Pursuant to our administrative rules, each matter on the agenda will be considered in the following order: staff comments, proponents, opponents, rebuttals, discussion among board members, motion, second, discussion among board members, and vote. Members of the public may address the board, and the following rules apply. Each person may speak once for 5 minutes and shall not have more than one time to speak, except that the chair may allow 2 minutes to the applicant for rebuttal. When more than one person wants to speak to an issue, each side is limited to 3 speakers with 5 minutes each. And the board may ask questions of any speaker and may allow more time or more speakers by a vote. Speakers should limit their remarks to the facts of the case and should avoid repeating comments that have been previously presented to the board. If you wish to speak at the appropriate time, please raise your hand via the Zoom meeting platform. And when called upon, speakers need to state their name and address for the record. Appeals of these decisions will be made to City Council, and a petition for such an appeal shall be filed with the Plans Review and Building Inspections Department no more than 15 days from the date of BZA's decision. I'll now ask Ms. LeClaire to call a roll.
David Dupree. David Dupree. Grant, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I don't see David.
I don't see David either. We might have lost. Maybe we should give him a few minutes, Grant, to see if he can reconnect.
Okay. Juliana, can he join us mid-meeting? Is that something, do we need to just recognize that whenever he does join the meeting, we can recognize that he's here?
I believe so. Without him, we would have you, Don, and Christina, and that would be the quorum.
Yeah, my thought was if maybe we get through at least the initial motion to hold this meeting, you know, via Zoom and appointing me chair pro tem, we can get a couple items out of the way at least while we're waiting.
I believe that work. Christina, does that sound okay to you?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
If we do that, can we make sure that we take the time at the end of the meeting to recognize David as for his servants, for his service to the board?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, Grant, I'll go ahead and call the roll aside from David. We'll do Don Horton.
Here.
Christina Buhler.
Here.
And Grant Rosenberg.
Here.
It looks like David may be here.
There we are.
David, are you there?
Yes.
There we go.
I don't know what happened. I had joined the meeting. Y'all saw me come in, right?
It's okay. You're just in time.
No. I got to tell this. It's a good story. I blinked and then it was gone. And so I saw the camera light was still on. So I said, well, maybe it's coming back like it does sometimes. but then it didn't come back. And so I said, well, let me load it again. Okay, that's the story.
No problem, Don. We're in the middle of roll call, so just in time.
All right, David Dupree. Are you here?
Straight again.
David, are you here? Can you hear us?
Must not have a good connection today.
David, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, are you here?
Did you hear me? I said present.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Christina, do we need a special motion to appoint me temporarily as chair?
Yeah, I think you can just, anybody who wants to make that motion right now, that sounds like a good plan.
I'll make a motion that we have Grant to operate as interim chair of this committee.
Second.
Okay, so I have a motion and a second. I have another question about this. Do I need to call a roll call, or can I just say all in favor say aye? Or do we have to go through a roll call?
Juliana will do roll call for you.
Okay. Juliana, please call the roll, or call the names.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
John Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Okay. I'll make another motion to confirm that conducting today's meeting by electronic means is necessary to protect public health, safety, and welfare of Tennesseans in light of the COVID-19 outbreak.
I'd like to make that motion, or did you make the motion? I'll second it.
That's fine. Perfect. Have a motion and a second. Juliana.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Thank you all. I'm gonna make another motion. I'm gonna make a motion to elect Daniel Odell as 2021 chairperson for Board of Zoning Appeals.
Second that.
I have motion a second. Would there like to be any discussion?
Just real quick for the record, I believe Juliana reached out to Daniel and did confirm that he would accept the nomination. So just wanted to get that on the record.
Yeah, let the record also note that whether he accepted or not, we were going to make that motion. Okay, so a motion and a second on the floor to appoint Daniel Odell as 2021 chair. Juliana, can you call the roll?
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Has everyone had a chance to read the minutes from the December 17th meeting? And I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the minutes as written.
I'll second it.
Okay, motion and second. Juliana?
David Dupree?
I abstain.
Grant Rosenberg?
Aye.
Don Horton?
Aye.
Christina Bowler?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Okay, that brings us to our first applicant. Is there anything else, any other business from the city that I need to entertain?
I think we do need a motion to just add the administrative rules consideration to the agenda. Just
Yeah, thank you.
I would so move.
Okay, a motion. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Juliana, call roll or call the vote.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, that brings us to our first item of new business, which is item 1-A-21-VA. First off, do we have any staff comments?
There are no additional comments from staff at this moment.
Okay. is the applicant present?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, please state your name and address for the record.
Seth Schweitzer, 1545 Western Avenue.
Mr. Schweitzer, you have 5 minutes.
Yeah, we're just asking for a variance on the setback due to the new 20-foot setback versus the existing building that now is non-conforming, that is at 15 feet. The request is to be zero because the property line sort of does a zigzag in the area we want to build, and the side of the building would be extremely close to the setback or to the property line. It's just to, you know, be able to utilize that land as well as possible and not make some strange building occur there and keep the conformity of the existing structure. That's about it. It's pretty straightforward.
Thank you, Mr. Schweitzer. Is there any opposition? Nobody signed up. I'd like to open up for discussion among the board.
The property line, the zigzag, was, why is it that configuration? Was it reconfigured for the new setback or?
I actually went back through some of the old photos on KGIS, and it's been this way for a while, a long while. So I don't know where the property line came from. I don't know if the building was existing and they did sort of the loop out towards Asheville Highway and down beyond the next end of the building. I don't have any background on that from my side of the table.
So is the current structure going to be torn down?
No, they're wanting to add 4 more rooms to the hotel in that area to the east.
And this is on this is on Asheville Highway, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So the request is just for that that short property line, correct?
Well, my understanding from engineering is that whole top line, even though it zigzags, is the front setback. So if we're coming to that right side, that zig or that vertical coming down, we're coming really close to it to get the rooms the size they need to be to meet the codes. And therefore asking for zero setback because of that vertical piece of the property line.
So the front elevation of the building is not in question. Is this that side?
The front is also. No, the front's supposed to be 20, I believe, and it's just 15 at this point.
And so you want to change from 15 to zero?
No, the request is, I believe the existing zoning as it is now is 20-foot setback.
Right, but right now it's 15 because of the existing structure.
Correct.
So if you're not moving the existing structure and putting a new structure, since it's the same structure, you can keep the current existing.
On the very front of the building? Yes, but engineering or someone at the city needs to chime in that vertical line that's 30 feet? 20 feet is part of the quote front property line. And that would mean I'd have to be also 15 feet off that vertical.
Grant Peters had his hand up for a little bit.
I'd love to give a little bit of context here. the structure was built originally, and then when the state took additional land for right-of-way, they basically left that back out parking in front of the structure. Mm-hmm. But essentially the property line was that property line furthest away from the structure extended. So if the state hadn't have taken additional right-of-way, they could extend this. It would be non-conforming, but it would be permitted to be constructed because it wouldn't increase the non-conformity. But because the state jockeyed around and we recognize that entire line, even though it jockeys as the front setback, because the state took that right-of-way, that's why they're now encroaching to that bottom corner, or that upper corner, I should say. Brian, can you put your pointer on that corner? I don't know if
you unfortunately can. Not. I don't. Let me see here.
Okay.
Well, give me just a second.
So the request is for the, there we go.
It's for right there.
Right there, okay.
And my point is, if the state hadn't have taken right of way, Brian, show where the property line would have been. It would have been up there. And they could have extended the building along those building lines without getting any closer to what the original property line was. And that would have been fine, but because the state took right of way, the state moved that property line closer, which is creating this hardship. Mm-hmm.
So help me understand. I'm missing a little something. We're only talking about the front. Are there multiple front setbacks that's being requested, or
we go to the most restrictive, and it's right, you can see the front property line that runs east to west, but then it jockeys around the building, right? So they want to put an addition on, which is the shaded portion. And that shaded portion butts up to the property line right along the driveway, on the left side of the driveway.
Right.
So because we recognize that entire property line as the front for the front setback, because it butts up to that one corner, that's why we've written the request from 20 feet down to zero.
But the driveway is not considered part of the street, is it?
It's in right of way.
So this request seems reasonable to me. My only concern would be that if that whole front property line is connected with this variance, then presumably in the future, they could build right up to that line closest to the street. I think if I understand that correctly. So I don't know if there's a way to word it so that it's just that smaller portion of the property line, or where it doesn't include that frontmost portion. But that's my only comment.
I'll let Christina chime in here. I know historically there would be statements such as per site plan submitted, so that it was bound to that site plan that you're looking at today.
I think that's appropriate for this one.
And so with that going down to zero, will that impact that parking at all now?
No.
Well, based on the hardship that the portion of the street and the fact of the build on sounds like a reasonable use of the property at this point. And since the right of way is abutting the street, which causes it to abut this proposed extension, I move we approve the request to move the setback from 20 to 0 feet on the front setback.
Just as a point of clarification, other board members, were you able to hear all of David's motion? Because I was not.
I was able to hear it.
Okay. Juliana, did you get the whole motion?
Yes, I did.
Perfect. Okay, just want to make sure.
Can we amend that to tie it to this site plan?
Yes, as per the site plan.
Okay. I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Juliana, I'm gonna take your roll.
David Dupree?
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg?
Aye.
Don Horton?
Aye.
Christina Bowler?
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to item 1-B-21-BA. Is the applicant present? I have Bill Coley and Andrew Howe signed up to speak.
That's correct. May I proceed?
Yeah, first off, I'd just like to ask if there are any staff comments.
No additional staff comments.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Coley, you have 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Bill Coley. I'm an attorney here in Knoxville with the law firm of Hodges, Dowdy, and Carson, and I'm general counsel to Knoxville Utilities Board. We are here today on behalf of KUB related to site development permit number R20-1531 for KUB's Fourth Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant Sodium Hypochlorite Conversion Design Project at Fourth Creek Treatment Plant at 1500 Lions Bend Road. KB seeks today an elevation variance for its current project and for future projects for improvements to KB's Fourth Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant. I want to introduce the other folks who are here in attendance today on behalf of KUB. They include Billy Joe McCarley, who is KUB's Director of Engineering, Shane Bragg, who is KUB's Manager of Water and Wastewater Systems Engineering, Daniel Bird, who is KUB's Wastewater Systems Engineering Project Manager for this project, and Andrew Howe, who is KUB's outside consulting engineer and project manager for the Fourth Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant Sodium Hypochlorite Conversion Design Project. Mr. Howe is the manager of the Knoxville Office of Hazen and Sawyer and has been engaged for many years on numerous projects in Knoxville and East Tennessee related to design and management of water, wastewater, and stormwater improvement projects. At this time, I'll turn the presentation over to Mr. Howe.
Thank you, Bill. Like I said, I'm Andrew Howe with Hazen and Sawyer, the design engineers for this project. And as he stated, we're simply seeking a variance from the 500-year plus one elevation requirement for finished floor elevations. This project is at the Fourth Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant, as Bill indicated, and it will be a conversion from utilizing chlorine gas to a simply disinfection with bleach, so it's a new facility. As the nature of wastewater treatment plants are, this one is obviously very near the river. It's at the bottom, essentially, of the watershed. Therefore, really the entire site is below the 500-year. It's even below the 100-year. But there is a levee surrounding the entire site that is at the 100-year elevation plus one. So that in effect protects all the facilities within the site. So in fact, this variance is really only requesting to match an existing variance that was approved in 2016 for a previous upgrade in the plant. So really all we're essentially trying to do is meet that same elevation requirement, which is 814.5. And that is matches, like I said, the previously approved variance. And is also, it's approximately the same floor finish of all the facilities within the site. Decreasing this, everything within the site is out of the floodway. It doesn't raise any flood heights. It's like I said, it's all protected by the berm, which meets TDAC's, Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, their requirement for wastewater facilities to be at the 100-year elevation plus one. So the existing levee meets that requirement, and everything within the facility is behind that levee. So that's essentially what we're asking for. Like I mentioned, there was the same variance for a very similar type project that was approved in 2016, and all we're asking for is to essentially match that previously approved variance. Our facility is over here on the right-hand side, adjacent to the river, the proposed sodium hypochlorite facility. But KUB has also identified a number of future projects that are part of their 10-year capital planning that they would like to add to this variance request as well, as they will all require the same, potentially require the same variances that are all bound by the same existing levee and below the 500-year flood elevation. So that's what we've identified in the hatch there. The solid line box is our proposed facility for this project. And that's all I have. Happy to answer any questions.
The change that you got in 2016, was that based on the new 500-year plan, or was that the previous plan?
That was based on it was the same request to be below the 500-year flood elevation. What I apologize, I'm not sure what 5-year plan are you referring to?
Well, that was the 500-year plan, and
500-year flood elevation. It was a request to reduce that as well, exactly the same as this one.
Okay, okay.
Are there any? I meant to ask. Is there anyone here in opposition, like speak opposed to this item? Do we have any signed up? Okay. Sorry, open up for questions for board members.
So this is, yes, I remember us when we approved the latest request. So you're saying the elevation, basically the same elevation that you're working with now as what we approved before. Question, can we approve future projects in this variance, or do you have to have an actual plan before we can approve these proposed projects?
We require a plan for each project. Unfortunately, because each variance has to be attached to the characteristics of the property itself, it's really not appropriate to grant future variances, unfortunately, as much as it might make some sense to do so, but unfortunately this whole process is just so property specific. Unfortunately, I don't think that we can do that.
That's what I was thinking, that it has to be a real project attached to a real plot. Okay. and cities, FEMA, and everybody is in agreement with this.
Yeah, we've discussed it with the city during the site development review process, and that's obviously when it was noted, and we identified obviously the reasons why, and you know, addressing the previously approved variants, and the thought was to go ahead and get the future ones that they knew were happening, but you know, if possible, as they'll all, like I said, they would all be behind the same levee, they would all need to meet the same elevation of the existing site. But understand each one may be more specific.
And Don, this is Joshua Fraze with the city engineering. I think David's on here too. He informed me that, I'm sure you were referring to the fact that we've in the past said that FEMA allows a certain number of variances before we lose insurance.
Right.
And he can chime in if I'm wrong, but FEMA has told us that they view utilities like KUBs differently. And so we're under the impression that that will not count against us if they get variances.
Don, this is David McGinley. I'm on the other Joshua Fraze login because he sent me his login and I couldn't change it to my name. But yeah, KUB, because they are limited in elevation, they have to continue to provide services. They can't elevate some forms of their plant and still provide those services without redoing everything. The city supports this variance, and in talking to FEMA, Josh is exactly right. They do look at utilities a little bit differently because they realize that they have to continue to provide services, and they're limited by gravity.
Mm-hmm.
We can't change those things. For those of you that have been on the board for a while, and you probably remember us coming and not supporting variances, but we've supported the ones for KUB because of those reasons. And those of you that are new, you may see something in the future where we don't support it, but with KUB's variances, especially in this case, we fully support that.
Okay, thanks. Well, recognizing gravity, I will propose that we accept this variance as it was stated, just for the proposed sodium hydrochloride storage facility on this site.
I'll second that motion.
I could interject here real quick. The site plan shows several other future buildings. It might be beneficial to go ahead and approve it for the site plan, and that may prevent them having to come back again in the future.
Well, my understanding is that we can't do that. Is that correct?
Unless we have a specific address for those other properties and we consider them at different points of time with different motions. Unfortunately, I don't think that's something we can do.
Do they all have the same address though?
They do. They are all 1500 Lions Bend Road. That's all part of the same site. So their address is the same.
And there's not a lot of detail to the site plan anyway. Well, there is detail. You do have drawings on at the end of the document.
Could we go to the other pages of the site plan if we're talking about multiple ones? Hmm. Whatever David was mentioning there in this format.
That's the only.
So we only have drawings for the sodium hypochloride building, right? Correct?
That's correct. Yeah. At this time, those are the only engineer drawings that have been prepared.
Christina, can we only approve it if we have engineer drawings, or would the site plan in the earlier slide with the overhead identifying future buildings, would that suffice as a site plan to grant variances.
Peter, let me get your input on that.
Is this, let me ask David McGinley, is this, are those hatched areas or dotted lines of enough detail for you in the future to approve and to move forward, or do we need something more detailed?
I think it is, because it identifies the location, it identifies what it is. I think that's enough detail for me to be able to provide to FEMA.
You will not know the exact elevation until the buildings are designed. Is that correct? But does that matter with FEMA, because you're behind the dike?
It does matter to FEMA, but that whole side out there is fairly flat, and it's protected by the levee. That's at the, is it 814.5, Andrew? I can't remember exactly.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it is a very flat site. All the existing buildings are from 814 to 816. There's not a whole lot of variance. So yeah, they would all be within a couple feet of each other. So yeah, and they, like you said, they all face the exact same issues of being, you know, at the bottom of the watershed, at the bottom of the drainage basin for Fourth Creek. But they're all behind the levee. They're all out of the floodway. You know, no new building here would increase the floodway width or the height. Essentially their request for any future building would essentially state the exact same thing that this one does.
I would say, as long as we can review any future buildings for the other aspects of zoning compliance, I think we should be okay.
And while I agree with you, Peter, I'm also kind of wondering in terms of precedent, you know, kind of setting a pattern moving forward on things like this. You know, just from an evidentiary perspective, if anyone were ever to appeal this type of a decision, it does give me some pause. Especially if that information is important to FEMA. And I understand that it may not change that much. I understand what everybody's saying, but it makes me uncomfortable.
Hey, Peter, this is Brian with the city. One of the things I wanted to point out is the reason they have to come before the Board of Zoning Appeals is based on the City Code of Ordinance, Chapter 12, Flood Damage Prevention and Control Ordinance, Article 3, Section 12. It requires them to go before a board to have this variance request for the elevation change approved. So in light of that, the zoning ordinance doesn't come into play from an elevation standpoint. It's the floodplain that does. And that's why we've looked at this from the standpoint of requiring them to provide a site plan that has the proposed as well as future projects, with the variance understanding that these future projects in the locations will meet the variance reduction in the floodplain elevation requirement. So that's kind of why it is for you as it is.
And I would even go so far, Christina, as to say that what we heard from David McGinley is that FEMA looks at utilities differently than private property. And so for that reason, it might not play by the same set of rules. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I also believe that in 2016, they provided a site plan and the variances were approved for that site plan. I could be wrong about that, but they had multiple variances at multiple different locations, and I believe they submitted site plans then, but I could.
Yeah, it was our understanding that some of the variances from 2016 were covering more site-wide facilities than just individual buildings, just for this reason.
I would say that they're site plan wide, but not just site wide.
Right, correct. Correct.
Not blanket variances for an entire site, but what's shown on the site plan.
David, that's correct. I'm looking at one that was approved in 2016, and it basically has a circle, a couple of circles located on the piece of property, and it was off of Chioa Circle and Lakeview Drive for an odor control air scrubber, as well as a pump station. And they don't provide specific detail on the actual construction of it, just the general location.
Right.
Yeah, and all these buildings and facilities are unmanned facilities, obviously related to the wastewater treatment. So it's not they're not occupied structures.
So I'm going to get back to the board here. Is there any board members like to make a motion?
So if we approve this site plan, it's conceptual in the location. Does it, if things change in the future in those locations, then do we have to, does KUB have to come back and request a new variance, or are we approving a conceptual site plan with these elements to be defined later and possibly different locations defined later?
I would say from my standpoint, they would need to be generally within the dashed circle or square or rectangle that's shown on the plan and generally what it's described as.
All right.
Something different, okay. I would say it needs to come back.
Yeah.
Christina may think differently, but that was my thought.
Christina does respectfully think differently. I'm not the one working in the weeds on this. So Peter, Brian, and David, if you guys are comfortable with it, that's fine.
Job security, Christina.
I'm gonna defer to David because he deals with the federal FEMA folks more regularly than we do. And so I'll defer to Mr. McGinley.
Is this a board decision or a staff decision?
Staff thinks you can move forward with it.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion. I'll make a motion. We approve item 1-B-21-VA and applied per applicant site plan. And I make the motion.
Grant, I'm sorry, just one quick interruption. I do see that Billy Joe has her hand raised if she needs to be acknowledged before we continue.
I apologize. I'm sorry for that. I did not see. Please state your name and address for the record. Or if we need to move her over to the panelist.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that.
This is Billy Joe McCarley, 421 Meadow Lake Circle, Seymour, Tennessee. Actually, I'd raised my hand about 10 minutes ago, and you guys have pretty much covered everything, so I really have nothing more to add at this point. So, sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm sorry. I'm new to being a chair, so I didn't see over on the attendees portion. Thank you for pointing that out, Julianne. So I've made a motion. There's a motion on the floor.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Julianne, everyone call roll.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda, item 1-C-21-VA. Is the applicant present? Mr. Dan Britton. In the meantime, I'll ask if there are any staff comments.
Yes, this is an appeal of one of my determinations. The zoning code gives us definitions, and it's the only definition that I have is vehicle dealership. And we can all probably imagine what was in the mind of our city when we were defining that. We're thinking of the vehicle dealerships on Parkside, where there's a long line of cars and a lot of overhead and inventory. Obviously, this doesn't fit that mix. This is more of a boutique type dealership, but I don't have the ability. I've got the constraints of the zoning code, and it still fits the definition of a vehicle dealership. So that's where I fit them. And so that's why I fit them there, is because I don't have other options. But that's the context by which you're going to hear this appeal.
Thank you. Is the applicant present?
Grant, give me just a second.
Sure, no problem.
There we go. Now, can anyone hear me?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Dan Britton, Architecture Collaborative, 6700 Balm Drive, Knoxville, Tennessee. What we've got is I've got a client that is interested in the old Arnwine's Furniture Store on Bearden Hill. It has been vacant for a year and a half now. It's an existing building with a small parking lot out front. And similar to what Peter had mentioned is this is looking to be a high-end exotic car retailer. You know, they've got a lot of indoor floor space that they want to display these cars. And, you know, this is not going to be a Ted Russell Ford or a Lance Cunningham. You know, there's really no room to do anything like that on this site anyway. There's only a dozen or so parking spaces. So all the cars will be inside displayed. And as Peter mentioned, description of car dealership, it may describe other things, but I don't think that's what this is going to be. So we wanted to come through the board here to make sure it's okay before we get too deep in the weeds with any type of renovation to the building or lease agreements or anything like that.
Okay. Anyone else on behalf of the applicant that would like to speak? Okay, we do have one person signed up to speak in opposition of this item. It's Amanda Pittman. Can we get her transferred over?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Amanda. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you so much. My name is Amanda Pittman, and I'm the owner of Animal Wellness and Rehabilitation Center, located next door to the old Arnwine's building at 6221 Kingston Pike. We have a joint permanent easement with that building, and I'm very concerned about several things, but part of that is the loading and unloading of these vehicles in our shared driveway space. If you can see on the map there from above, we have parking in our front parking lot and parking in the back, and our handicapped entrance, which is where all of our handicapped pets and people enter the building, is in the back. So any obstruction of that driveway by a big truck will definitely impede our client service. We've had some issues with another entity that rented that space with that, and also with them parking in our parking spaces. As you can see, there's very limited space in the front of the old Arnwine's building. We have very limited space and just barely meet the requirements for our own building. So the last time it was rented, we had people just taking all of our parking, and I'm very concerned. I don't know what the use is, if there's going to be shows or events or anything like that held there, but the parking is definitely a major problem for us already. And then I'm also concerned about how changing the use of this and adding auto sales in this zone, how it will lessen the value and desirability of our own property and how it could open up the door for future tenants to do more with auto dealerships that might be more infringing than this current one is.
Okay, thank you. I'll with the applicant, I'd like to have some time for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Amanda. Thank you for the comments. And without speaking to the, I guess the client, I don't know if I can answer to the questions of shows or events or anything like that, or how the vehicles will be delivered. I do know that inside the I guess there's the ability to only show or display maybe 20 vehicles. And I don't know if these will be delivered via the big, large, auto carrier semi-trucks, or if these are more of a single car and a flatbed type thing. I don't know the answer to that, but we can certainly find out for you. And I don't know if you've had any contact with the current landowner. It sounds like maybe there needs to be a conversation there to work some of these things out. So I can understand parking being an issue, and I would say the tenant would be more than willing to, put signs up and say, parking only here or something like that. That happens throughout the city. And I would say we can make that part of their lease agreement, addressing all these concerns of yours.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Grant, I believe that what we're asking for is to not change the zoning to allow car dealerships, but to get a better description of this retail, to not call it a car dealership. It's kind of what we're looking at, I think.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask that for clarification to staff. The way the request is written is appealing the interpretation as a vehicle dealership instead to a retail goods establishment. Is that correct, Peter? That they're arguing that this is a retail goods establishment and not a vehicle dealership.
They're saying it functions like
a retail store
establishment. Yep.
Like instead of furniture, they're selling cars.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I will. I'll open things up to the board on this. Any comments and questions?
Well, that was my concern too when I read this. That if approved, would we be allowing future car dealership to be on this site unless we redefined it away from a car dealership. If we approved it as it's presented right now, would the future tenants be able to move a car dealership in there?
Not a traditional car dealership, no.
We have a copy? Christina, can you read that article 14.4.c?
Sure.
On the screen.
Okay.
It's 14.4 is the zoning administrator's powers. That's me. It says the zoning administrator has the following powers pursuant to this code. The zoning administrator may appoint a designee to act as the zoning administrator. Part C, to make final decisions on zoning interpretation applications. So that's not
what I want. Then,
are you looking for the definition?
Yes, the vehicle dealership definition.
Good question. Yeah. Can we? Do we have the definition? Is that something we get pulled up? The definition for vehicle dealership.
Can we get the definition for the retail as well?
Good question. Yeah. Good.
Yes.
A vehicle dealership is an establishment that sells or leases new or used automobiles, vans, motorcycles, and or all-terrain vehicles or other similar motorized transportation vehicles. A motor vehicle dealership may maintain an inventory of the vehicles for sale or lease either on-site or at a nearby location and may provide on-site facilities for the repair and service of the vehicle sold or leased by the dealership. B, Vehicle dealerships do not include truck, trailer, boat, or heavy equipment sales, which are considered heavy retail, rental, and service. And
I've got retail goods if you want me to do that one, Peter.
Sure.
Retail goods establishment is an establishment that provides physical goods, products, or merchandise directly to the consumer, where such goods are typically available for immediate purchase and removal from the premises by the purchaser. Retail goods establishments do not include specialty food service or retail liquor stores.
That definition for vehicle dealership should also be in the city staff comments that were emailed and provided to the board members.
Yeah, thank you. I just saw that now. Sorry about that. I have a question. I was thinking about this case. I recall a couple of years ago on Market Square, Local Motors had a store. Right on Market Square, and they had a car in there and some other vehicles. I know it's probably different zoning, but it made me think of that as like a non-traditional. And I think this is an issue, you know, as Peter said, you know, when they drafted the language in our zoning ordinance, didn't really, it was the traditional car dealerships. And I think car dealerships are going to change going forward, you know, with the advent of electric vehicles and, you know, Tesla dealerships being located in shopping malls. And I just think it's going to be an emerging trend. So, you know, my initial reaction is probably needs to be addressed in the zoning ordinance. I'd rather not address it through variance, but I thought about that precedent of Local Motors Market Square. And I'm just wondering if there's any thoughts on that from staff.
I think back when I was not here long when Local Motors came in, but their primary, I don't know if you ever, obviously you were inside there. It's not like they were selling a whole lot of vehicles. It was mainly merchandise. And I think they had a vehicle on display, but I don't think it's something that you purchased and picked up there. If you did want a vehicle, that transaction took place somewhere else. But it was more of just a way to introduce the business to our area. And as you know, they built their primary business over off the Pella City Parkway.
Yeah. Thank you.
It seems the issue is not the fact that they're selling cars out of there, but the circulation, the delivery of the cars, what happens around the building related to the site, and is there enough room for all of that to occur? And maybe there needs to be better definition of how the owner intends to use the site. The fact that there are cars inside, I don't think is the real issue.
I appreciate those comments. And I thought about that too, but then I thought about what it, you know, it was a furniture, store. So that there had to be deliveries, large orders. So I think, I completely respect the Ms. Pittman's comments and their legitimate concerns, but they're legitimate concerns, whether it's they were concerns there was a previous temporary use, I'm not sure what it was, probably Halloween direct decorations or something like that. But any use that goes in there, there could be those issues with parking and the circulation. I'm just trying to understand why, what is the difference between, and again, this isn't the traditional, I can see how this is not the traditional, you know, large mega dealership. If we're talking about a couple, you know, Ferrari and really high-end expensive vehicles, it's not going to be a huge volume. There's not going to be a lot of volume of people coming in and out and test driving. There could be, I guess, but it's more. What's the difference between some, 12 cars in this showroom and hundreds or thousands of pieces of furniture? From a use standpoint, I don't see a major difference, I guess. But I don't know. At the same time, and I think the variance before us is really zeroes in on, can we classify this as a retail goods establishment instead of a vehicle dealership? I think that's what's before us right now.
Yeah, I think you're correct. And, but not only that, I think it also turns on whether or not we can, well, one thing we can't do is that we cannot modify the zoning, that the things that are allowed in the current zone. Mm-hmm. That's something that they will have to take up with city council. And the question then becomes whether or not we can classify it as a retail establishment to the exclusion of it being classified as a car dealership. While I do think that based on the definition of retail establishment, it does meet that, I don't think that that particular definition of car dealership. And I think that one is the one that's going to take precedent based on the current use as it was explained, the current intended use as it was explained. And based upon that, my motion is going to be that we uphold the Mr. Aaron's interpretation.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
We have a second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion from the board? I'll make another cut. I tend to agree. I'm looking at looking back at our standards for variance, and variances should not be granted to allow a use otherwise excluded from the particular district. Based on the definition, I guess the wording I have here, a motor vehicle dealership may maintain inventory of vehicles for sale or lease either on-site or nearby dealership or nearby location and may provide on-site facilities for the repair and service. I think that's more the sticking point, but it just says may. If it says it shall, or I think this is a use that's, as it's written, it's excluded in this particular zone. What would be the zone? Is it the next zone up that would allow this use, Peter?
I think it's CH. The CGs do not allow vehicle. One quick second.
Yeah, I think the remedy is going to be either get the
commercial highway or commercial regional
zoning change. Yeah, either get the zoning changed or get the definition change of the car dealership. One or the other. But that's beyond us. Either way, it's beyond us.
Yeah, what you're hearing today is not whether a dealership can go in there, but it's whether you think that what they're doing is a vehicle dealership or if it's just a retail goods establishment.
Exactly.
I think it's hard to say. I could argue that it's a retail goods establishment, but it's hard for me to argue that it's not a vehicle dealership. I guess that's where I'm having an issue. I'm having trouble arguing that it doesn't meet the definition of a vehicle dealership. It does. And that's why I plan on voting in favor of Mr. Dupree's motion. Any other discussion?
This is Dan Britton. I'm not sure if I'm, can you guys still hear me?
I'm not sure we're at liberty to entertain more discussion from the owner, but if the board's okay with it, I'll allow it. Mr. Britton, go ahead. Mr. Brenton, you're muted.
There we go. How's that?
Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't want to, you know, muddy the waters any, but what's the difference between this and an art gallery?
We're not going to debate that, but I will say an art gallery doesn't meet the definition of a vehicle dealership, and this what's being proposed meets the definition of a vehicle dealership. I think that's just where we're going to be up. I think this could be easily challenged if we were to approve it because it meets the definition of a car dealership, and that's going to be the sticking point. With all that said, you'll have an opportunity if the motion carries. Applicant certainly has an opportunity to appeal this decision to City Council. Certainly, you're right to do so. But any other discussion from the board? Okay, Juliana, can you please call for roll?
David Dupree?
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg?
Aye.
Don Horton?
Aye.
Christina Bowler?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Britton, and hopefully good luck going forward with your client. Mm-hmm. Okay, next item on the agenda, item 1-D-21-VA. The applicant present. And I'll go ahead and ask if there's any comments from staff.
No additional staff comments at this time.
Thank you. Do we have Jonathan, Jessica Boone?
Yes, sir. My name is Jonathan Boone. Thank you guys very much for letting me talk for a little bit. I live at 595 Arrowhead Trail, and we are looking to make an addition to our home that would include a garage, a little bit of an expanded kitchen, and a master suite. Based upon the positioning of the house on the lot, in order to make this look consistent with the house and not take away from the main structure there and tie this into the existing driveway that wraps around to the back of the house on the south side, that was where we chose to make this addition. As you can see there, the south side is considered the rear of the property, and we are asking for a variance to reduce that 25-foot setback. I think it could be argued which side is the real rear of the property, and so we're hoping to get a couple of feet there. I think it's reduced back to just over 22 feet. So it's really only less than 3 feet of that 25-foot setback. And we have gone to our neighbors and asked if they had any objections to that and asked them to sign a letter as long as they were comfortable with the addition. And the surrounding neighbors did sign that paper.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Boone. Is there anybody here in opposition to this request? I don't see anybody. Any questions or comments from our board? Mr. Boone, what is the topography of your lot there?
Yeah, so it slopes from the driveway up on actual Arrowhead side, and then the driveway goes into a walkout basement back on that far corner, and so that the driveway is kind of the lowest point of the housing structure and the basement on that side. So it would right through there. That's the lowest point. And so it would tie in so that the kitchen addition would be sitting level with the current main floor of the house. If that answers your question, I'm not sure.
Yes, thank you. I didn't see the document that had topography. Any questions comments from the board? I'll make a motion. We approve this variance, approve item 1-B-21-VA, reducing the minimum required rear setback from 25 to 22 feet, 1 inch, due to the size and shape of the parcel and topography associated with that.
I'll second that motion. That seems to be the minimum requested variance, which is different from what we see on the original, I guess, but I don't know if it's original or not, but on the site plan that we're looking at, which says 20 foot rear setback requested. So, the fact that it's been adjusted sounds like an attempt to minimize the variance needed. And so, yes, I would second that motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further comments or questions from the board? Not hearing any. Juliana, I'm going to call the roll.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
John Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
All right, next item on the agenda is review of our updates to BZA administrative rules and procedures.
Grant, this is Brian. I'll take over and provide a couple details on the other business. First, before we get into the updates on the BZA administrative rules and procedures, we want to take a moment and recognize Mr. Dupree. David Dupree has been on the board and is finishing up his 5 years of service. I believe Mr. Dupree, your first board meeting was back in February of 2016.
That's and right.
I did a little bit of research. And so from that point moving forward, we've seen and heard right around approximately 498 BZA applications. So wow. I don't know if you were a part of each and every one of those, but I know you were probably for the bulk of them. So I want to take a moment and thank you for your service and the dedication to the board and just providing what you have for the citizens of Knoxville here. So thank you very much, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you.
David.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure to serve and happy to I didn't even know my term was coming up to an end like this. It's definitely been a good ride. I've definitely enjoyed my time and enjoyed meeting all of you, making new acquaintances. And so it's good. I wanted to make a motion, if it would be appropriate, to allow my incoming replacement to at least, should she feel it appropriate to take part in this discussion, even though she can't vote. Ms. Ebony James, who's been sitting and observing our meeting today.
That's correct. Thank you, David. I wanted to also bring to the board's attention, Ms. James has joined us as a participant, but will soon be a board member. She is with the Associate General Counsel and Corporate Secretary at Oak Ridge Associated Universities. And Mayor Ken Cannon has recognized her through an appointment, and her approval will go before City Council this coming Tuesday, January 26th. So, Ms. James, we want to welcome you and look forward to working with you on the board here.
Thank you all so much for having me today. I really have enjoyed my time and listening to you all. And before I continue, I just want to say Mr. Dupree. You seem like a really awesome guy. I hate that we're doing this high five thing where you're going off and I'm coming on, but I do want to say that if I may have an opportunity after just to kind of speak with you about your time and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I was scared you'd say no way.
No. Feel free to bend my ear.
I will take you up on that. I appreciate you all having me and being able to sit through this. And I look forward to working with you all after my appointment is official.
Welcome.
Yeah, we look forward to working with you. And David, we're going to miss you. And it's been a pleasure. I've only been on the board a year, but it's been a pleasure working with you on the board. And I do miss you. I do miss sitting next year at meetings, but hopefully we'll see each other in person again sometime. But I'm wondering if we could squeeze in two more agenda items so we can get to an even 500 on your career. But no, that's impressive. And thank you very much for your service and my experience this last
year. Only a few ones.
My experience this last year, I mean, this is not a, you know, really not a lot of glory in serving on this board, but it's really important. And it's a great service. And we do have some really tough decisions. Seems like every meeting, there's at least one item, sometimes more, that are really, really challenge us. And it's important. And I think we do a good service. And we got some really great people on this board. So Ebony, welcome, and look forward to having you with us. With that said, do we need any formal motion related to either of those announcements, Brian, or are you going to go right into the administrative?
I don't think so. I think we'll just go into, there's a couple things I just wanted to make you guys aware of as we move forward with the changes to the BZA administrative rules and procedures. That will go before council for approval here soon. And so I'll do a quick screen share and just kind of point those out. I think they were provided to you, a copy of them for review. And so I'll be brief. Generally, the bulk of these changes were related to just updating some language in it and changing some terminologies to be reflective of what's now in our city zoning ordinance. A couple things I will point out is one of the things that we're recommending is to add another as vice chair. This vice chair role will help by automatically default, allowing that person to take charge of the meeting if the chair can't be there and will enable us to do that, I think, in a little better process. The next one is a new way to allow applicants to request for postponement. Our department no longer receives facsimiles or faxes, and so we're providing an email with building inspections at Knoxville TN for them to request postponement, and we've changed that to allow the applicant a little more flexibility. As long as we receive that no later than 4:30 on the day before the board meeting, that we can update that agenda for you guys at the request for the applicant to postpone it.
I don't know if I, but why eliminate facts?
I'm sorry, Mr. Dupree, it's breaking up, but.
His question was why eliminate the facts as an option?
Our department eliminated the ability to fax here, goodness, probably a year or so ago. We've been functioning and working like that for quite a while now. It's just kind of a sign of the times and technology. And I think, we've been continuing to move and we don't really have any requests for that moving forward or a desire from individuals to continue along that path. And so we've just kind of removed that.
I had a question about the makeup. First off, I the one I really like, I like the idea of adding a vice chair because it just helps for continuity for when folks can't attend the meeting. It just allows for that logical next person in line to serve as interim chair. I also thought about this too, though. The number of members on boards on City BZA at 5, I assume that's in the zoning ordinance. Is that correct?
It is. It's in the city zoning ordinance.
Okay. I'm just asking if there's been any discussion about. I mean, I don't like really large boards, but at the same time, you know, we've had some situations on this board where, you know, either somebody's absent or we've had, you know, I know there was a case that Daniel and I both had to recuse ourselves, which then it requires, you know, a unanimous vote of the board. So I didn't know if there'd been discussion or that'd be something that worth entertaining to have increasing our numbers by one or two members just to allow for those situations, I guess. But there may be unintended consequences to that as well. But I just wanted to ask about that and see if that's been a discussion item in the past.
At this moment, it hasn't been. It's definitely something we can talk about internally and kind of see if what that would look like. But at the moment, there hasn't been a request or anything looked into for that.
Grant, and I'll say too, on meetings where we only have 3 people, you're right to point out that, you know, they would need a unanimous decision, even though the attendance might be a little low that month. But at the start of those meetings, typically what we try to do is we just let people know every decision has to be unanimous. So if you want to request a postponement, that is more than fine. And some people do go ahead with that. And, you know, other people are on tighter timelines and they, you know, choose to go forward regardless. So, but we do try to give people that option and work with them.
And I think for the most part, the 5 has worked out, and there's only been a few occasions where we've been to 3 and, as I remember that, and yes, offering the applicant the option for delaying has worked fairly well. I don't think there have been a few cases maybe where it was necessary for them to get a decision without delaying for a month. But I think the 5 has worked out pretty good in my experience.
Appreciate that, and just like I said, I wanted to ask about it. When I worked for the county, I was staff for County BZA. We had 9 members, which wasn't bad, but it may have been too many. But so I don't know if there's a sweet spot on numbers and for votes. But other than that, I don't have any other recommendations on this. I think I'm okay with these changes. I think they're good changes. I guess the question I had, do we want to go ahead or do we want to wait till next month to appoint a vice chair? That would be prudent because we have to approve this and then we can do that next month.
That's right.
Okay, good. I'll make a motion. We accept the updates to BZA administrative rules and procedures as revised.
Were these all of them, Brian? Or did I just cut you off because I started talking about one in particular and I don't know if you had finished going through everything.
So thanks, David. There was just one more and that's the last one here on 12. We making a recommendation to reduce the days that an application can continue on the agenda from 120 days, which is the equivalent of 4 months, to 60 days. Which is equivalent of about 2 months. So basically with the thought and understanding that, if an individual with an application, it takes 4 months to go through and provide the BZA site plans to vote on, chances are that it probably shouldn't have gone before the board to begin with if it takes 4 months to try to do that.
Brian, I see that we have an error in that last sentence. That should also say failure to act within 60 days means the application is going to be part of this. So we'll need to update that part.
I do have a question about that failure to act. So I mean, does the board the board, and that means the board has to vote it, approve or deny within 60 days?
That's correct.
What about situations where, you know, we just mentioned that there's, you know, there's only three members present 1 month, and then another month it's, I could see where it could go a couple of months in situations, I'm wondering if that's too much of an adjustment. If 90 would be more reasonable, but I don't know. I'm thinking out loud about that.
No, I agree with you on that. Plus, I think also the wording is a little open-ended, and it may need to be closed up just a little bit, because it says the board shall vote on all items within 60 days. A vote, when it says a vote, technically a vote could be considered a vote.
A deferral. You can make a motion to defer.
Exactly.
That's a vote.
Or a motion to take it off the agenda. That's a vote. So, you know, it may need to be tightened up or... Or if that was the intent, then, you know, that's fine. But I don't know if they should be. I think the intent should have been to, you know, shall vote to approve or disprove or shall vote on all items of, I don't know. I can't think of a good wording. That's Christina's job, so.
That's why I asked the question, David. Just good. Right, glad you point that out. Yeah, I asked why. Does this mean we have to vote, approve, or deny?
Right. So I would definitely go with the 90 days, though. I agree with you, Grant.
I'm
leaving, so do what you want.
Brian, do you mind to allow me to share my screen here?
Yeah, just a sec. Let me stop sharing here.
Sure. All right, can you all see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, all right, so I'm gonna just come down here. And we're saying we wanna change this to 90.
If staff doesn't have any objection to that, again, I don't, it's just, especially if we're talking about approving or denying an item within 60 days, I mean, within two, that's two meetings, correct?
That would be, yeah. And
so, yeah, I just worry, you know, I mean, that I don't want to, you know.
And I was
creating problems, you know.
There is 2 months where there's 31 days in each month, and a meeting could fall.
That's right.
Where there's only one meeting.
Good point.
Understood. Those are good points. I think staff has no opposition.
So we may want to go to 3 meeting cycles or three.
Sorry, David, you're breaking up on us. I think what you're trying to say is, instead of saying days, talk about specific meetings.
Or months.
I guess I'll defer. Christina, is there a legal reason why we need number of days versus meetings or months?
In the past, we had the 120-day rule. Mm-hmm. Honestly, this doesn't come up much anymore. It did with some particular applicants in the past. But it really hasn't come up in several years. I mean, we could phrase it more as, you know, the third monthly meeting or something like that.
I think moving it to 90 days, I think kind of resolves a little bit of the timing issue. It's a good point about, you know, could you just do number of meetings, but I don't know if, does that confuse, you know, if we say consecutive meetings or I don't know. I don't want to create any unintended consequences whenever you start messing with these rules. You know, I'm trying to think how can someone else interpret it in the future? I'm open to the board on that. Or Christina, whatever. If you all think, if you think 90 is better than saying three consecutive meetings, I don't know. Whatever makes more sense legally.
Brian, Peter, any thoughts on that?
I don't have any initial thoughts on one way or the other at the moment. To be honest with you, I haven't thought about changing it from 90 days to consecutive meetings, a certain number of consecutive meetings. So I don't know.
We can change this at any time in the future, obviously, just by majority vote.
Well, we can't because city council has to approve the regulation, the rule. So,
okay.
We can always propose it to city council, but they're the actual arbiter of it. To be on the safe side, I would suggest that we go 95 days and then that would cover those months where there's a little wiggle room needed. And then we would be clear. Mm-hmm. That would definitely make sure we make the 93 months.
That makes sense.
Sure.
Okay, so then the only other thing I changed at your suggestion, David, and I think it's a good one, the board shall vote to approve or deny all items within 95 days.
That's excellent.
Okay, and then I moved it down here to failure by the board to approve or deny within 45 days.
Perfect.
Okay.
That's right.
I will amend my prior motion that we approve the revised Board of Zoning Appeals administrative rules procedures as just edited, and I'll make that in the form of a motion.
And I'll do my final second.
Thank you. Any further discussion from the board? Okay, Juliana.
David Dupree.
Aye.
Grant Rosenberg.
Aye.
Don Horton.
Aye.
Christina Bowler.
Aye.
Okay. Without any other items, next BZA meeting, February 18th. And we have a training coming up as well, folks, right? Am I right about that?
Yes, February 19th. It'll be done by Zoom. And it will be recorded in case you can't be there. But just note that the BZA members, there is an annual training requirement of 4 hours a year, and this one training will satisfy half of it. And if you have not gotten the calendar invitation with the Zoom link, let me know. I think I have a Zoom link already. If not, you'll get it. But I think you, at the very least, you have a calendar invite with a note to hold that time slot open for that training.
Thanks, Christine. I do have a hold on my calendar, but I do not have a link.
Okay.
Okay. Any other items? Do I need a motion to adjourn and approve, or just I can just adjourn the meeting, correct?
You can just adjourn it.
Okay. Sorry. First time.
Hey, Grant.
Yeah, sure.
Brian, I just got one more thing I wanted to add.
Yeah.
So Scott Elder will be taking over at the next BZA meeting, and he will be running the BZA meeting. So Scott sat in here with me as well for this one, and he'll be taking controls in February.
Going forward or just in February?
Starting February and going forward.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
So we won't have you here with us going forward. We'll miss you, Brian. Thanks for all your help.
I'll still be on.
So. Oh, you'll still be on. Okay.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Without anything else, I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you all very much, and see you all next month.
Won't see me.
See you, David.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Good luck, David.
Bye. Thank you.